What else didn't disappoint today's Tadej Pogačar? We got our wish. The fucking guy ripped the pavement off Alpe d'Huez. I mean, literally, the local municipality is probably out there now repaving pieces of it.
Yeah. Is this the Pogačar era? I mean, when in the history of cycling do you have 40 guys over 4 minutes up the road with some of the best climbers in the world? And they don't make it.
Yeah,
don't
man. Yeah,
and they don't make it to the to finish line.
Top tier climbers.
It's unreal.
I'm Lance Armstrong, joined by Sir Bradley Wiggins, Mr. George Hincapie, fully on the mend. Proud of you, man.
I'm back.
The professor, Spencer Martins. The professor has been hard at work today. A lot of data to crunch. A lot of times to look at and compare. A lot of watts to think about. We, of course, are talking about stage 19. Alain, our good friend, what do we do?
Stage 19 from Gap to Alpe d'Huez. Mm-hmm. From Gap to Alpe d'Huez.
Mm. Alain is going to make a drop-in tomorrow. We're going to have a live reading.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. Of the stage. Alain will be here. He's going to take your seat for about a minute.
He might not give it up.
I saw him yesterday at the bottom of Ashcroft.
Oh, biking?
Yeah, biking. Hmm. Full We Do kit on.
Attaboy.
Looking good.
Well, he is on the team. I mean, he's on the show every day. Wow, Alpe d'Huez. I love the setting. Obviously, all of us have been there so many times that you kind of have to. You get the sense if you just went there and rode it on a day where there were just cars driving by you, but to ride that race with those people. I mean, it's a sanctuary, and it didn't disappoint today. And what else didn't disappoint today is Tadej Pogačar. We got our wish. The fucking guy ripped the pavement off Alpe d'Huez. I mean, literally, the local municipality is probably out there now repaving pieces of it.
Yeah. Is this the Pogačar era? I mean, when in the history of cycling do you have 40 guys over 4 minutes up the road with some of the best climbers in the world, and they don't make it.
Yeah,
don't
matter. Yeah,
and they don't make it to the finish line.
Top tier climbers.
It's unreal.
Yeah, Lenny Martinez, Richard Carapaz, Sepp Kuss, mows them down 4 minutes. I was impressed by how he was going fast. He was ripping the road up, almost not in control emotionally. Mm-hmm. He seemed, even when he went, he didn't go. He didn't stand up. He just kind of noodled off the front. He catches Yates. Works hasn't worked for 2K, like you said, George. And then even when those guys were right out there, he was never going too deep.
Not only that, but teams like EF, like their whole mission was to keep Carapaz as far up the road as possible. All in, team time.
Pulling
as hard as they can before Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah.
I mean,
never a doubt.
And UAE wasn't even pulling. The other teams.
Yeah. I mean, a team who's on the ropes, as has been well publicized. All forms of illnesses and aches and issues running rampant through that team. Played it perfectly.
Yeah.
Let the other team, I mean, the guy's riding for 10th or 7th or team G, whatever they're riding points class. They just teed him up, Bradley. Yep.
That was a mean Tadej at the finish.
Yeah, good.
The celebration. Like, how'd you like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've been waiting to see that Tadej for a couple of days now. I'm glad he didn't remain with Del Toro and try and nurse him to get third. You know, he played his own card and left him to do his thing. So it was a classic Alpe d'Huez. I think it went down in the history books as a classic Alpe d'Huez.
Mm. Yeah, he said the climbs before Alpe d'Huez were full gas.
Even
Pogačar said that. So I think when he got to Alpe d'Huez, he realized it's going to be mano a mano anyway.
Like, I mean, the group was so small, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was so small. Yeah, he just went 1K in.
Well, it was Johan's theory that him attacking at the bottom was the best thing for Del Toro because it locks everybody in a pace behind.
Yes. Yeah.
So in some ways, he could attack and it didn't really hurt Del Toro.
No.
Just sitting there in the group, yeah.
So is that the best climbing performance ever?
Yes.
Climbing performance or Alpe d'Huez performance?
Climbing performance.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because we know he broke the record by a minute and 25, right?
Watts per kilo for 30.
Is that the best ever? Or
probably.
How are we? It's a good question. How do you measure that? Do you measure it in watts per kilo? Do you measure it in VAM?
Probably not the best VAM, I would assume.
The best VAM probably still goes back. You know, to set or sort of break the record for VAM, you have, I mean, Alpe d'Huez is steep. I think it averages 8 or 9%. To break a VAM record, which for those at home, that's the total vert climb per, I think, hour. Mm-hmm. You have to have a really steep climb, right? So I believe up until this point, just like Alpe d'Huez up until today, Marco Pantani had the best time up Alpe d'Huez. He also, I think some of the climbs in the Giro from that era, he was smashing VAM records, well over 2,000 meters VAM. But in terms of time, got to talk about the time, right? And Spencer, you brought up an interesting point. I this is kind of a head scratcher for me and living in 2026. You know, even if there isn't an official start line and there's not an official finish line of Alpe d'Huez, I mean, they're really sort of, this is easy. I mean, if I were the town of Alpe d'Huez, I would have it permanently marked on the road yeah. so that every Tom, Dick, or Harry could go over there and compare themselves. But we can get close, right? And by all accounts, and by the way, the time wasn't close, so it really doesn't matter. He smashes Marco Pantani's record by a minute 25.
Wow. Yeah. I did not expect that. More than I thought.
I don't know. I expected that.
I expected that.
By that much.
Yeah. Minute yeah. plus.
I did not.
Well, every other climb they've been breaking records by at least that. Two yeah. minutes on, yep. on the Tourmalet. Yep.
Well, 7 watts per
let's
kilo.
Let's not forget we're 3 weeks into the Tour de France too.
Yeah, but I don't think that matters anymore. Look how they're racing the first
I know.
Few
that's
hours.
My point. It doesn't yeah. matter.
And we are Pantani's record. We are talking 30 years ago.
Yeah. Mm. On think of the rolling resistance of his tires. Probably terrible. Bike probably a little bit heavier.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Clothes not as good. I mean, but yeah, he probably did 455 watts for 35 minutes. Oof. I mean, that's 7 watts per kilo is.
Mind you, yeah, a body weight of
60. The reporting we have, this is inside reporting, was 64.5 kilos.
Which
so.
Is pounds wise is
140, 150 pounds.
Yeah. So for all you 150 pounders out there that have a Peloton or some other little thing in their garage, go on out there. You eat a big breakfast. Have a lot of coffee. Go out there, you 160 pounders. Jump on. Just start at 455. Let us know how long you go.
Yeah.
We already have enough of those people that think they can do good watts and they can be pro cyclists and they're all these influencers, but it's you can't say that unless you ride in a Peloton or the Tour de France in Europe. You know small what? Roads, corners. This is, it's only 50% of it.
You know what? I appreciate the snark. I love the snark. Well, that's not story. Like you.
It's funny. I know a guy who he just got on Zwift and he did 500 watts for an hour just on Zwift. It was just hard to do.
Yeah.
And then he's a good example because he's not a professional cyclist and everything kind of falls apart when you get in the heat of the battle.
Yeah.
Everybody's 185 pounds.
There was a British amateur last year who was breaking all the Strava records on these climbs.
Canadian guy.
Canadian.
Jack Burke.
I'm sure he did Alpe d'Huez, didn't he?
Yeah. He is the, well, we should see if his Strava segment got beaten.
Yeah, we should. Look it up.
Taddy isn't uploaded yet, though.
Go ahead. Look, while you're looking that up, Professor.
What, can I point something out
real quick? Sure, of course. With the snark that you have today, I hope you talk more.
Five Americans. Out of six an entire race in the breakaway. I mean, how cool is that to watch? I mean, these guys, a lot of them trained together at times, have gone through the junior ranks at times, raced American races growing up. And just to be in one of the most iconic breakaways of the Tour de France, they didn't win. Sepkus got fourth, I think. But still, it's incredible to watch these Americans. Third week of the Tour, making the hardest breakaways still. Mm.
Almost a negative, though, if you think about it, because you have to be so good to be an American in the World Tour that you'd be in the breakaway on the Alpe d'Huez stage. That's the bar just to get in. Yeah. No panakukens.
No zero panakukens. Also, honorable mention, Richard Carapaz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You gotta get, I mean, the guy's tough. The guy is tough. Won the stage yesterday. I mean, there was a second. He had 3+ minutes at the bottom. Worth noting, Tadej Pogačar went with just under 12 kilometers to go. That's a long ways from the finish. I can't imagine who would ever do that.
Yeah, and then just factor in his attacks. I mean, he does these 10-second full gas sprints. And you were looking at Tadej's average watts, but how do you even factor in these sprints when you're on full gas up 40
he
minutes of the climb?
He seemed to be anaerobic the entire climb.
The entire time. But
not just that. He was sprinting for every King of the Mountains during the stage as well.
Yeah.
We said yesterday he was on a roll.
Yeah.
You know, you almost could question because he, as Tade was bridging a three-ish minute gap, you had to know. I mean, if you're Richard Carapaz or his team director, you had to know he was coming. You had to know he was going to close it. Maybe not. Maybe not attack, continue to attack. You're not going to stay away from him.
Yeah, he was trying to get rid of Martinez, wasn't he?
Well, but that wasn't his problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you'd have just, and who knows, right? There's a lot of, it'd be very hard, even if you were rode the best race tactically you could. It's very hard to stay with Tade. Even Tade, I mean, when he surged there, the hardest he tried or the most that it looked like he was trying was he. You could tell he put in this surge when he was in the saddle. The gap opened up. He looked back and saw the gap. And then you saw that. Then he really accelerated. You saw him. I mean, yeah. His cadence went up 10, 20 revs.
Yeah. So if you're thinking he averaged 450 watts, that in the saddle acceleration, what, 650, 700? Yeah,
probably.
almost 40 minutes into
after
a full
he
gas climb.
3 minutes faster than those guys. Yeah. But you're right. If they almost should have struck a truce of let's just work together. And then we'll sprint it out.
And we'll see who has the legs to stay with this guy. And then we'll all cross our fingers. I'll cross my fingers and see if I can beat him in the sprint. Highly unlikely, but a better chance. That, yeah. Nonetheless, hell of a ride by him. Let's do our 8 Sleep move of the day. The Pod by 8 Sleep is a smart mattress cover that easily goes on top of any existing mattress. Heats or cools each side independently from either from 55 to 110 degrees Fahrenheit. I've talked about it. Game changer. Love this thing. Traveled with it up to Aspen for the summer. Also the official sleep sponsor of UAE Team Emirates. 8sleep.com/themove. Get your sleep cover there. So Bradley, move of the day.
Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it goes without saying. That was quite some ride.
Yeah. By the way, fifth stage win of this tour. 26th stage win of his career in the tour.
Yeah.
And we're not done.
Probably could have had more at this tour. I think he gave one away.
What's his total victory in professional cycling? Do you know what that is?
It was over 100. He celebrated his 100th victory, right. I think, last year.
But I think it's 125.
Yeah, something like that.
Let me look it up. It is 126. 126 today, yeah. Okay. Wow.
George, move of the day.
I mean, obviously, Tade, move a day, but I'm going to have to go with Carapaz making the breakaway again, getting the mountain jersey, super aggressive throughout the day. The whole team was backing him. I mean, like Spencer mentioned, I mean, they have a really solid plan in this Tour de France. Backing one of the best climbers in the race to get in the breakaway, get him as far up the road as they possibly can. And 99.9% of the time, that breakaway is making it to the finish line, unless you factor out Tade Pogacar.
Well, right. But when he's in the race, then you have a 0.1 chance.
Yeah,
especially exactly. When all the other teams say we got to get Tade to the base of this climb with them in reach.
Yeah,
I mean it warmed my heart to see that.
Well, right. I mean, and I mentioned that earlier. I wouldn't be surprised if they not let Lenny Martinez go, but maybe encouraged him to go. Or once he went, they're like, thank God, because that just puts all the pressure off of UAE. Mm-hmm. Then you got three or four teams that have to chase Lenny Martinez down, which we saw happen today. So that was actually a master class tactical race for them today.
Yeah.
Spencer?
It's Pogacar. I mean, that was incredible. Also, I know Jack Burke's probably watching. I'm sorry, Jack. He hasn't uploaded yet, but you're going to lose the KOM by about 3 minutes.
Oof.
Wow.
Dang.
Mm.
My move of the day, the obvious one is Pogacar. I'm gonna pivot a little bit here. I'm going to give it to Adam Yates. Think back to 2 or 3 days ago. I think it was 3 days ago. This guy was so sick, and we're watching him, and they showed him. The coverage kept showing him just barely able to pedal. Had a teammate with him, whether or not he could finish the stage, sick as a dog. We've all been there, right? It's so easy to climb off and just say, hey, and nobody's going to fault you. Nobody's going to criticize you. Say, I'm so sick. I can't pedal. He stayed in the race. I think it's the ultimate look of a professional. I mean, he knew that the team was going to need him. And look at him today. This guy is, while he may not be back to the legs of a normal Adam Yates, but he certainly wasn't swinging off the back. And I just think it shows his class and his dedication to the team, his dedication to Pogacar. He wasn't getting off. And just class.
Yeah, there's nothing easy about recovering from a stomach illness in the middle of this third week of the Tour de France. So you're right. That was
and the average class person ride. Could have watched that and said, "Why is he even doing that? Yeah. Just get off the bike." Mm. But he knew 2 days later, like they're going to beat me.
Yeah. Even just the optics of it, right? Just even if you know that if I finish, I stay in the race, I probably won't be able to impact or help the team that much. But just the optics of them losing a rider like him gives the other teams a little bit of juice. And I just think it's an incredibly professional thing he did on his part. Unreal. I would have got off. Maybe. Got to talk about Mads Pedersen. Talk about professionals. Holy shit, Mads Pedersen.
Yeah.
This guy. Dude, this guy is like Hall of Fame linebacker, heavyweight champ.
Yeah.
Like this guy fights, gets in the break, makes it over these climbs. You know, 2 days ago, his finish line interview was like, he was defeated. He was basically said it's going to come down to Paris. He had another plan. This guy making the moves. Dude, it's over. He's got the green jersey locked up.
Third straight day in the breakaway.
Unreal. Yeah.
But you think how much effort he's put in since the start of this race. Yeah, there's not been a day that you've not seen him as part of the race somewhere along the road.
Yeah.
It's quite a commitment.
And those guys are key. These guys like Carapaz and Pedersen, they are key to the race. Without them, it would be far less interesting.
Right. Yeah. We said it a week ago. These are the stories that the third week always gives us.
Yeah.
Which is great. Today's show also brought to you by Kenyon. Excited to have them partner with us. The Move Plus, which of course we got right here. Had a little issue yesterday. Apparently, we ran out of juice, so Bradley charged it up. After decades of racing and training, aches and pains are just part of the deal. Knees, joints, all of it. That's the price of admission for the time spent in the saddle. The thing I really love about it, it's not some surface-level fix. It uses targeted light therapy, which you can see right there, to get deep into the muscles and joints right where the pain actually lives. And it's easy to carry around. You can use it anywhere, whether you're just chilling at home, checking emails, traveling. Makes it easy to do. You don't have to make any appointments. There is no hassle. Use the code THEMOVE for $50 off or go to kenyon.io/themove. Also, our good friends Element. Been hanging with these guys for a long time. Our favorite drink for long rides. Speaking of long, hot days in the summer, really doesn't matter. Element is a zero sugar electrolyte drink mixed with everything you need and none of the junk. If you've ever had cramps, headaches, fatigue, or you're just sweating buckets on the bike, hydration isn't optional. Most sports drinks out there, loaded with sugar and artificial garbage. Element has none of that. No sugar, no dyes, no fillers, just sodium, potassium, magnesium, and the stuff that actually works. But wait, there's more. Element isn't just for the bike. We also now have the 12-ounce sparkling cans available in multiple delicious flavors. Can be enjoyed throughout the day to keep you hydrated and sharp. And right now, they're giving the Move listeners a free 8-count sample pack with any purchase. Just head on over to drinklmnt.com/themove. That's drinklmnt.com/themove. Team has been, look at Spencer's hammer. I mean, team has been, every time I walk in, people just,
oh yeah,
just jamming these sparkling cans. Ecoy, here we got the helmet on. George, you're rocking Ecoy. I wear Ecoy. You wear. Yeah. No, you no.
Well, I used to. They are great helmets.
You don't ride your bike anymore.
No, I do.
Occasionally.
Yeah, I do.
As we saw during today's stage, it's hot out there and clear that heat management will be key to winning this tour. But while staying cool is key, it is still important to maximize speed. That's why the Ecoy R-Aero helmet is the perfect weapon for these road stages. The R-Aero is specifically designed to be both aerodynamic and cool and has been found to save up to 7 watts at race speed while offering crosswind stability. This is why multiple teams at this tour, as well as George's Modern Adventures team, trust it. So if you want the same advantage for your own riding and racing, scan the flow code on the screen, check out the link in the show notes, or simply head to Ecoy, E-K-O-I, Ecoy.com to get yours today. We are getting down to, if you're French, it's been interesting. You know, there's so much, and we have spent a lot of time, and rightfully so, talking about Paul Seychelles. We're going to talk about him even more in the second part of the show. He's the great white hope for France, but we got 2 days to go. We're coming up against kind of a historic thing here for the country of France. Still no stage wins. for the country of France. That has only happened twice in history.
Yeah.
1926.
99.
And 1999.
They do have two or three in the top 10, though, don't they?
They have
two
three.
In the top five.
Four,
two
fourth,
in the top five.
Fifth, and 10th.
Yeah. Well, it does raise an interesting question. Would you rather have two in the top five, potentially one on the podium,
yeah,
or a stage win?
No, that. I mean, if you can give, and we're going to, again, second half of the show, because this is, we are going to talk about tomorrow's stage. We have to talk about this fight for third place, because it's tight, right? And that, I think that's, you know, Paul Seychelles is in fourth.
And I think some of this is France, it's growing pains, because it's just like, oh, there's so much pressure. We got to win a stage. And you'd have guys that probably should have been the GC dropping out of the GC to get a stage win. Where it's like, no, let's just function like a normal country. It's like, maybe we don't get a stage win, but we're going to try to get a podium. And I think they are progressing, but this is a temporary growing pain they're having. Like Lenny Martinez today, in a normal tour, maybe he's going for stage wins, but he's in the top five overall.
Yep. Yeah, you've also got somehow Lenny Martinez, who's on Bahrain. He's not a French team. Seychelles is on, obviously, a French team in Decathlon, who are very international now. But the absence of, you know, what they called now, Total Energies, Cofidis's, La France des Jeux, Groupama. You know, in the past, those French dominated teams always had riders that would potentially try and win a stage.
They were factors
in every day,
and they've been absent in this tour from start to finish. Yeah. Groupama. I mean, there was a time when, you know, you had Thibaut Pinot and the sprinter they used to have. I forget his name now.
Damar.
And those guys challenging for stages, but. Yeah, I think they're struggling, those teams, that sort of base level, grassroots level of French cycling.
I mean, could you tell me if Cofidis has been in this race or not?
No. Or Frances de Joux.
At least they did have Romain Grégoire bridge up to the breakaway.
Well, Total Energy. Total Energy.
Yeah, they got a guy in the top 10 at least. They're fighting for top 10. Yeah,
true story.
It's also just harder to get stage wins than it used to be.
All right, we're going to be back in 2 minutes and 32 seconds. Welcome back to The Move. I kind of, you know, y'all wouldn't believe what gets said in the 2 minutes and 32 seconds.
Let's tell them.
That's why George got mad at us for somebody even just mentioned a word that's not politically correct. And, oh, you can't say that anymore. You can't say that. We didn't say it. We said that somebody else said it.
True.
Right? And that somebody else was Juan Ayuso.
If you watch the Dauphiné, you'll know.
Yeah, tough day for old Juan. Interesting guy. A lot of folks think he was raised mostly here in the U.S. Spent some time here, but not as much as people think. His English is very good. Of course, he made the big transfer from UAE to Trek. But bad day, off day for Juan Ayuso. Lost quite a bit of time, lost a couple of places on GC. Not the tour he wanted. And they were riding, right? They were riding in support of that. And now his teammate, Skelmoso, who we all agree is kind of having a five-star surprise of a tour. But Juan Ayuso is a guy who has so much... there was so much promise behind him.
And
he's a believer of that.
And like when we say promise, it almost doesn't do it justice. He was at UAE, the best team in the world with the best rider, maybe of all time. And he was the management's preferred rider. Like he was untouchable. They didn't want to get rid of him. They were trying to figure out, how do we fit this guy into the team with Pogacar? They don't get along. They won't race together. And there was considerations of like, do we keep Ayuso? Like that's how much they like this guy. And they only let him go because a team paid them 9 million euros for a transfer fee. It's a lot of
money. How old is Ayuso now?
He's 23.
23.
You know?
Still young. I mean, the problem is he's racing against, generational young guys as well.
Well, yes, you could say that. But also, he's losing to his teammate, Mateusz Skelmoza.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, he's only losing to the best riders. Like, he's not the best GC rider in his team at this tour.
Well, he's only one place behind him.
But he's minutes back.
2 minutes back, yeah.
But Skelmoza wasn't even a GC thought coming into this race.
I had some homework for you as well, Spencer, for tomorrow.
What's that?
What is the average age of this year's top 10?
Wow.
And how does it compare to...
All right.
Is it the youngest top 10 we've ever
had? Let me write that down.
Well, I think that's easy to figure out.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy. We could do that while we're sitting here.
I think you're overestimating the record keeping in professional cycling.
That's a good point.
I have a job for you.
This is create a new database.
Yeah.
easy to do. Nonetheless, tough day for him.
Yeah. Great day for Skelmoser.
Well, it's not just a bad day, though. Think of the time trial. He was terrible in the time trial. Mm. And, you know, this is the second bad day he's had in the third week. Mm. It's just who he is in the third week.
Yeah.
And he went to the Vuelta last year as their as a GC leader for UAE.
Yeah.
And he kind of was uninterested in racing for them or listening to them. It starts to become a bad look when it's like, well, I didn't like UAE. I left. And now I'm all in. Like, you know, if you add in his salary plus his transfer fee, you could be looking at a 14, 15 million euro investment on this guy.
So he's making more than LeBron next year.
Yeah. Like he said. And I can't imagine this is what they had in mind. I actually don't even fully understand the transfer.
I just got to think of it. Equally overrated, those two guys.
Ouch.
Would you have taken
it's LeBron? Funny that it's just
LeBron on $4 million a year. Do you think that's a good deal or
no never. I mean, we're here talking about the Tour of France. What do we possibly know about basketball? But what I do think is interesting, and maybe this is with every sport, you know, my I grew up, maybe you did too, George, in the era. MJ is the best of all time as far as I'm concerned. But you get these younger kids, like my son Max, 17. I mean, he laughs at me.
This is concerning to me.
He laughs. He's like, "Are you crazy, LeBron?" He starts all the stats. He's like, "No, it's not even close." So, like, generationally, yeah, I mean, yeah. But MJ, come on,
he's never lost a finals. I think LeBron's lost more finals than Jordan won.
Like, there you go.
Yeah, undefeated in the finals is pretty good. Six.
They won't have it. Anybody listening or watching, and you know, got kids at home that follow basketball, you understand. And if they're under the age of, say, 25, you got no chance. They will swear up and down that LeBron is the GOAT. Why are we talking about this?
this is crazy.
I am curious about this average age. It could take about a minute to do if you look at the things there. It's young.
Yeah.
Right?
Very young.
I mean, who would be the oldest guy in this group of top 10?
It's Carapaz.
Tom Pitcock? I guess
you're... Carapaz is the only rider over the age of 30, probably, because Tom Pitcock would be the next oldest rider at 26.
Mm. You know, again, we haven't spoke about it for a couple of good week or so now as to how Seychelles was going to hold up in this third week. Another strong day today.
Yep.
Let's not forget, he's still... We almost forget because we're getting used to seeing him in the race now and his talent. He's still 19.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, if you talk about Tadej breaking the record... Is Seychelles was for sure will be the fastest 19-year-old that has ever been up Alpe d'Huez.
That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's probably one of the fastest riders of all time up Alpe d'Huez.
We keep talking about the podium as well, and that's the expectation in France of him getting on the podium. But fourth place in this tour, if he finishes fourth, if it remains the same tomorrow, is a hell of a performance for a 19-year-old.
No doubt. And not only that, great to see Rigatello with him there till the finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Really helping minimize that gap to Del Toro. So we'll see tomorrow.
I mean, this is a fun story to watch tomorrow. It's I never thought I would find myself talking about the intensity or the excitement about third place in the Tour de France. But when you factor in two young riders, one incredibly young, one who's the hope of France, Paul Seychelles, am I looking at this?
20 seconds.
20 seconds.
He 20 looks seconds. Stronger in the third week than he did the first.
By the way, I mean, it a hell of a ride if a 19-year-old gets fourth in the Tour de France, but it's a different thing standing on that podium in Paris. Like, that's worth... Tonight, he's going, where do I find 20 seconds? Isaac Del Toro is obviously riding great, an incredible talent. But Paul Seychelles is like, I have to find 20 seconds. I have to be on that step.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Up until now, every mountaintop finish, Del Toro has been slightly stronger than him, just by a few seconds.
Yeah.
But Spencer brought up a good point. I mean, he's got a nice buffer, which is over 2 minutes to fifth place. So he has enough buffer where he can be a little bit, he can gamble a little bit. And I would encourage him to gamble. Like, don't gamble so much that you, by the way, I guess having said this, I mean, if you're going to get fourth, you may as well get fifth. As far as I'm concerned, well, it doesn't matter what I think. But if you're going to get fourth.
Because he's not going to want to be the second Frenchman. He's going to want to be the first Frenchman.
True. I mean, if it's 20 seconds, let's say they finish on the same time tomorrow, it could go down to Paris.
Yep.
Yeah. It'd be thrilling.
Could do. unless they stop the time.
I hope they don't.
And shout out to Remco today as well. I thought he was solid.
Great ride.
You know, we didn't.
He slowly answered all his critics over these 3 weeks.
We don't know who they are.
No, I mean, and Red Bull, they rode most of the day as well, combined with, of course, one or two guys from UAE. And Remco, great ride. Yeah, I'm pleased for him.
Yeah. He's kind of entered a new. He got third at the Tour. Now he's probably going to get second.
Yeah.
And you'd say how. The question I walk around with in my head all day, every day, who are the best GC riders below Pogacar? And he's probably starting to enter that conversation.
He's lived up to the price tag.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you say that, Spencer, because in the beginning of the Tour, you said he couldn't climb.
Well, now he can climb. He could not climb. And now he can
now
climb.
He can climb.
By the way, it's between Del Toro and Seychelles on the classification. It's actually, we were looking at yesterday's GC. It's 24 seconds. And the difference between him and Martinez from fourth and fifth is 3 minutes. Yeah. A little more wiggle room there. You gotta go for it somehow, some way.
Yeah. Did we mention there's a 1 point difference in the KOM jersey?
No.
It's gonna influence the race tomorrow for sure.
Yeah. Well, we know who the best climber is in the race. And
Martinez.
He doesn't have the polka dot jersey. But let's look at tomorrow's stage. Hyperice. Is presenting the next stage preview. This is a hell of a stage. Hyperice. Everybody knows the brand. I'm a huge fan of the brand. The Normatec Elite Legs. It's funny. I have old images of me wearing the very first versions of Normatec back 15 years ago. Since we're like dinosaurs. Still have them to this day. You get 15% off all Hyperice products now with the code THEMOVE15 at hyperice.com/discount/THEMOVE15. Now, let's pull it up. Pull up this graphic. This is
what we've been waiting for.
This is not a tropical delusion. This is the day before Paris. This is hitting a peloton that is completely devastated and fatigued. This is 18,000. I'm going to say it again. 18,000 vertical feet of climbing on the day before Paris.
That's
the race settled.
And it's only like 106 miles.
Yeah, it's a relatively short stage.
And we know these climbs like the back of our hands. This is like the quintessential Alp stage. And these climbs
This
are
is
just
what
relentless.
We should be doing, actually.
Yeah, this is
Quad Affair, Telegraph, Galibier, a sort of hybrid version of Alpe d'Huez. But this leading up to that, this is what you see images of when you're growing up.
Look at the height of the Galibier. That's basically where Bradley and I are sleeping.
Yeah, that's true.
But they start from this valley is not that high above sea level. Like that's a huge, this is crazy ascent.
Mm-hmm.
And then is this stage misplaced? Should they have just done this at stage 9?
Yeah, but this goes back to the design of this route. I said it 3 weeks ago. I think I was proven right, honestly. I think this is It's a very strange tour. This particular stage, I would have loved to have seen this a week ago. And I also go to sleep at night, maybe not, but I think about just going back to a classic tour. What happens? You know, it's interesting. They design these, whether Tadej Pogacar wants to think about this or not, or anybody else wants to think about it, they design these routes to defend against him. They did that to defend against me. That never works. The best guy is always going to win. But I kind of cross my fingers and hope. But let's go back to a traditional tour, like a 20-year-old tour, 30-year-old tour, long-time trials. Pyrenees on each weekend. Pyrenees one weekend, Alps the next weekend, like a bunch of stages for field sprinters. Let these guys have 10 opportunities to win field sprints.
What do we think is going to happen tomorrow?
Great question.
Because we haven't been this high in the Tour de France this year, have we?
No.
This kind of altitude, which, you know, again, racing as hard as they have been at those altitudes, you know, it's very unpredictable. And particularly on the Galibier. I mean, that last 300-400 meters of elevation, guys are cracking and, you know, guys are coming to the fore that we haven't seen before because they're better at altitude.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting stage tomorrow.
Well, I think it's interesting for the folks at home because if you watch the race on TV, you see these huge mountains, and here the guys are in the high mountain. The altitude must be terrible. You know, we're sitting here in Aspen, it's 8,000 feet. We're, as we sit today, we can go up to 12.4. If you went over Independence Pass, you can go up to Ashcroft and be at up over 10. That's real elevation. You know, if you look at the profile, yes, they're going to spend some time up there, and yes, they're going to feel it. But most of it is you know, not sea level, but just above sea level. So there's a, most of that time is spent at lower elevations. But to your point, what is definitely going to happen tomorrow is Richard Karapaz is going on the attack again. Because I also do think, to your point, Bradley, here's a guy who grew up at an incredibly high elevation.
Still lives there.
Still, I mean, this is nothing to him. And he did it yesterday. He did it again today. He is going to do it again tomorrow.
And he's on a roll. But Pontre said after the finish that he sat up just to save for tomorrow's stage. Oh boy. And he's so far been beating him in every sprint in the early climbs. So it's still tight. The race isn't over. And I think it's going to be a small selective group at the top of this mountain, first mountain going for the KOM sprints. They'll probably stay away, but really, ultimately, like we've seen this whole Tour de France, it all depends on what Pogacar wants to do at the end of the race.
Yeah, I tend to think not a GC day because UAE has no team left.
Yeah.
The team is on their knees.
But they're going to get help.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see a Matthew Riccitello riding, doing something perhaps aggressively for Seixas to finish on the podium. You could see.
Yeah. I mean, you can see couple guys in the top, like lower
these stories.
Half of the top 10 sneaking into the breakaway like we saw today. Takes the pressure off UAE, which then in turn give Patate a chance to win another stage.
Here's where it gets really weird. So three HC climbs. When you get over the last one, the Col de Saran, there's two more climbs. It's like rolling. There's two more climbs left that are around 1K to 4K each. That's going to be hard to control.
Yeah.
So you could see like a GC group with Karapaz go over. Like if yesterday is repeated tomorrow, or sorry, today is repeated tomorrow, it could be hard for Pogacar to, because you're going to have to nail everybody back on these attacks after the final big climb. I don't really know how it's going to play out.
The thing to keep in mind too, and keep the profile up, the climb, it really looks like one climb in the middle with the Telegraph and the Calabria. You guys know this. You've done it dozens of times. They're two separate climbs, right? Telegraph is a category one. Calabria is a horse category. There is a small downhill in the middle. By the way, you don't even feel the downhill.
No.
That is one climb. They may as well just have it categorized as one climb. Yeah, it feels like one climb. Like, and if you total it up, it's 35 kilometers of climbing, right? From the 80s. I mean, it's 3K of a downhill. These guys do that in less than 3 minutes, probably 2.5 minutes. That's not, there's no recovery there. This is one long climb. It's a beast.
If Pogacar, let's say he had a disaster a few days ago, a breakaway went away, he was 10 minutes down. How much time do you think he could make up on the others on this stage if he had to go all out from the beginning?
Well, we saw him take out 3 minutes on some of the best climbers in the world today.
It's two and a half on Remco. So there's.
Yeah.
The way he's going, he can go solo on the Galibier and nobody will see him again.
Or before. He could go on the Telegraph.
And we've seen him do that. This is like the world's European championships. Yeah. Like, he's done that before. If he wants to do it, he can do it.
He's again. Not going to have to do that.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to go for the stage win?
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
No.
This Bradley, is, what do you...
I'm hoping... I don't know. I mean, this tour is very difficult to predict, isn't it? But it'll be interesting. It'll be nice if it lived up to the expectation again tomorrow, that this is going to be a decisive stage, which is what they've planned the route to be. But it's not going to challenge Tadej, is it? No. It's just whether he's going to want to win the stage or not. But the problem with these kind of things is you can't see a break getting as much time as they have been getting because on here, it's more climbing.
Because they can't climb that much faster than the peloton.
No.
The Queen stage. Because if, let's say, Martinez, or let's say Karapaz goes up the road, teams will want to peg him back because now he's becoming a danger in the GC. So that does set up a Tadej win potentially.
Running out of time to give us a call. What do we got? Jeez, two more days
to call.
Are we taking calls on the last day?
Yeah, we have to.
Okay. We have to. Well, you got two more days to give us a call.
Live calls.
I'm down.
And I only say that.
I would love to have live calls. Imagine.
Live calls.
Imagine the shade that could come in.
That could
get
us all. 970-718-2736 goes right to Liz Cruz's phone. She picks up most of the time. when she's not out riding around on that goofy ass scooter of hers. Did you see her taking hot laps in the West End yesterday? Mm-hmm. Caller number one.
Hey, Lance, I'm Carol from Orlando, Florida. I'm 78 years old and I love your show. Given the growing popularity of gravel racing, should a gravel mountain stage be added to the tour? Thanks.
Carol, it's that's cool. Carol, 78 in Orlando. Damn. We're reaching the people, dog. There has been, you know, look, I mean, there's a lot of ways to think about this. I mean, I actually do think that events like the tour should acknowledge the industry. The industry is a big funder of this sport, the teams, the athletes. And for the industry, gravel is the shiny new thing, right? If you think about this, the bicycle industries, certainly here in the United States, you've got the rise of gravel. You've got the rise of e-bikes. I mean, you could almost make the argument, well, why wouldn't we do a day where people have to manage battery life? Right? Crosses my mind.
Now we're pushing here.
There's like carbon monoxide poisoning in the studio.
What is?
Well, according to 60 Minutes, you had to manage battery life in 1999, right?
That's right. And that little tick that I had where I always grab my chamois.
Yeah.
That was the on-off switch. The dirty little secret, literally, is that I was always trying to line up my ass and my chamois and my seat. Because if they were not lined up, it just didn't feel right. I digress.
So why were they always coming out of line, though?
I don't know.
That was like a Nadal tick, I think. Because you did always do that.
Anyhow, still does it. Carol, it was a couple years ago we had a gravel, some gravel stages. You can have a flat gravel stage. There are some of the summit finishes, some of the high mountains that had some stuff on gravel. I was sort of surprised. They were not viewed positively by the teams and by the riders and by a lot of folks. And so you really haven't seen it in a couple of years. I've always speculated that the perfect bike for Perry Roubaix is a gravel bike. George always laughs at me. Having said that, he's done 10 plus Roubaix. I have done
17 Roubaix.
Like I said, well, that's 17's more than 10, but I always thought a gravel bike was perfect for Roubaix. It's a good question. They gave it a run. It was not viewed. The guys didn't like it.
Well, back in the day, most of these roads, particularly the ones they're climbing tomorrow, the Quad Fair, there's pictures of copy coming over the Quad Fair, and it's dirt road. So it's not quite gravel, but it's dirt before they were all tarmacs, of course. But I've never been a fan of the gravel stages, per se. I just think it's too much of a change. I mean, the cobbled stage is great in the Tour. I think they're brilliant because Paris-Roubaix is a big part of cycling, but which we haven't had for a few years. Oh, we had 2 years ago, didn't we? We had a cobble stage. But no, not the gravel for me.
I agree. I mean, the Tour is hard enough as is. Yeah. It's dangerous enough as is. Like, why add to it?
I'm always surprised. It's definitely a European-American split. I always think it's kind of cool. And then you remember Tadej's first Tour win, 2020, they had a gravel. It was like they went over a climb. And
it was 2 kilometers long, wasn't it?
Yeah, but like,
and I remember Richie Porte had a flat, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think Roglic had a problem.
Yeah.
And it would kind of be a shame if course, it feels kind of random. You're like, well, what if Tadej flats and loses the race because there's a gravel section? But I kind of like it. But you're right, Bradley, that everyone in the race and around cycling in general hates them. So I don't think they'll be coming back.
Can we go back to the e-bike thing for just humor me for just a second? You've lost interest. You're not you're thinking about leg day. I know you are.
No. But I am.
You had to manage battery life. You know, you've got, let's just.
Come on. Tom Pickock did win the world mountain bike world championship.
Okay,
he did.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's not talk about it then.
He's the best at managing battery life. That would be kind of the stakes would be high. Can you imagine running out of battery the last?
Then you're riding a heavy bike.
Yeah. Are you getting paid from ASO? What's going on here? Like the eGiro has gotten in touch with you. Now you're going to be an ambassador for them.
He was messaging Terry Gouvenou. Yeah.
I said to Terry Gouvenou is what the head of competition for ASO. He's also the guy that jumped out of a car right in front of Richard Carapaz at the end of a mountain stage today and nearly took him out. Believe it or not, that same guy actually raced in the Tour de France. Of course, he was never at the front of any fields. To have to consider things like that. I don't know who picks the route.
He once finished a couple of spots behind George in Perry Bay. 2001, he was seventh.
Wow.
Oh. Jeez, you would remember that.
Why would you remember that?
I don't even remember 2001 in Perry Bay.
You do, because so that was the one you punched in Arenberg.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's 2001.
Don't panic. Yeah, Servus Carnarvon went away in the final, and they had three Domo, Weinsteins, Museo.
And,
Roman Weinsteins.
Right. I got fourth.
Ike Matan.
Yep.
All right, caller number two.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Janice calling from Butler, Pennsylvania. What do you do with all the LCL stuffed lion mascots that you receive after each yellow jersey stage win? You have to have a bunch of them at this point. My husband and I, Marty, love the show. Bye now.
Janice, thank you. Bradley, go ahead. I hope, and I want you to go first because I hope you have a better answer than I do.
Well, traditionally, I think, I don't know if it's always been the tradition, but certainly in recent years, it's it brings kudos to each team by putting them in the front of the bus, you know, in the windscreen.
Yeah.
And it's a way of teams rocking up the start game. We've done something in this race, you know, look at our lion, you know, and obviously someone like Tade will have a lot. So that you kind of run out of space for doing that. But I made sure I kept all mine together. But then, of course, teammates who have children, you'd give, you know, give Michael Rogers, he had a couple of daughters, give him a couple for them. And you eventually start losing. But I kept about three or four of mine.
Yeah. And do they still do the daily small lion giveaway
For the team?
For Team GC. Yeah. So we would have had a lot of the small ones. I would have had a lot of the big ones. There's one here. Can you, I'm covering him up every day, Janice. Look. Wait. You see him back there. Fuck, we should move him. I think I'm down to two. You know, it's interesting. You when you're there in the moment, you just don't think about these things.
Yeah.
You don't think about, and now as we sit here, as I sit here at 55 and Bradley at a few years younger.
Quite a few years younger.
Quite a few years younger. I mean, you look back on that stuff, right? Wow, how did I not just...
Keep it all.
Yeah. Right. And you know, you get these little medals, and at least in our generation, you got these cool glass medals for stage wins that had the town etched on the stage etched on there. And you're when you're there and you're in it, you're like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like, what am I? It's just another thing I got to carry in this suitcase tonight. Oh my God. And then, you know, you're on a team with a bunch of staff, a bunch of people. Buses and trucks with equipment, and you know, these are your people, but it's shocking. Stuff goes missing right over the years, and so you get 30 years down the road, and you're left with two. But having said that, the one thing I will say that never leaves, right? You can hand off lions to teammates' kids, and you can not want to carry the medal for the stage win. But the one thing that never leaves is your memories. And so thank God, because I know I got a lot of them. And I know you folks out there listening and watching have a lot of them. And you're going to have memories of this performance today of Tadej Pogačar. You would have had memories of mine, of Bradley's, of George's. And those stay. Those stay forever. And so that's great. How about that?
Love it.
It's an amazing
way to end the show.
I love the Lions. We're not ending the show because we're going to do Ventum Trivia.
Oh, that's right. We are.
Ventum Trivia. What was Terry Gouvernay's
job? But I love the Lions.
Before cycling.
I love the Lions. Great.
Well, and if you don't, and the Lions are a thing, not because it's the tour, it's because of the title sponsor. Credit Lyonnais has been the title sponsor for so many years. I mean, you can imagine a world where they say we've fulfilled our initiatives, our goals, and we're going to move on to F1 or whatever. And then MasterCard comes in, right? And then the line is no more, right? But it's been the thing, and Credit Lyonnais has been such a integral part of this tour for so long that it's, it makes it to the call-in line.
The tour is amazing at holding on to sponsors and making them a fabric of the race. Like growing up, as a kid in the middle of nowhere, I loved Skodas because of the tour sponsorship. Mm. It's all I wanted to have was a Skoda. Mm. That was like the coolest.
And I think it's a shame when nice some cars. Races lose that.
Yeah.
Like the Vuelta about 15 years ago lost Well, had a new sponsor, and they wanted a red leaders jersey. Yeah. When it always used to be the Amarillo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only problem with Skoda is now, and we have taken
exception
to the fact that it's not, it's kind of a, I don't know, what is it? Dark green jersey?
Yeah. Bring back
PMU. Let's make it green, bright green, real green.
I'll talk to Skoda about it.
Talk to him.
Yeah. Get taken care of.
Getting down to the end, kids. Ventum Trivia. Enter to win over at ventumracing.com/themove. $5,000 credit towards the Ventum bike of your choice. Yesterday's question, the finish at Orsier Merlet is legendary for a 1971 stage where a Spaniard crushed Eddie Merckx, taking around 8 minutes out of him. Who was that? Answer, Luis Ocaña. He's a beast.
Yeah.
8 minutes out of Eddie Merckx.
That's crazy.
At dinner that night, yeah. What's up?
Then Eddie cursed him.
Mm, happens. Today's question. Stage 20 crosses the Col de Galibier, which earns what distinction in the 2026 race? Stage 20 crosses the Galibier, which earns what distinction in the 2026 race? By the way, we alluded to it when we looked at the stage preview. Answer and enter to win at ventumracing.com/themove.
The better question would be, when does the Galibier, when is it included and it does not earn this distinction? It's hard to think of climbs that would supersede it.
And not a climb that has, I mean, that it's just a climb. Those ones that do what the trivia question says that it does.
Yes.
The Galibier is a top five. It's a monument, right, in the country of France. When you think of
what kind of... Because you go up and then there's like a tunnel, right? With these big doors, and it kind of separates Italy from France. And you're like entering the Alps when you go through them. Of course, the race goes above that.
By the way, does it though?
I don't remember that.
I think we go through the tunnel.
They go through the tunnel?
No, they go over the tunnel, which is the highest point.
Because at times we would go to the tunnel.
Depending on the weather.
I was always like, thank God we're going to this. Thank God they made this tunnel. Yeah. I'm sick of climbing.
I think they go over it tomorrow.
Yeah, they go over the tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It adds an extra 300 meters of altitude on there.
Which feels like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the descent they go down tomorrow is actually the scariest side.
Yes.
It is a sketchy descent.
Yeah. It's just, there's no guardrails, isn't it?
No guardrails.
Last time they did it, Teddy attacked off.
Yes.
Spencer, we need you. This is going to take you 60 seconds, but for tomorrow's show, let's get an average age of the top 10 on GC.
Do like the last,
it's a shockingly low number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, all right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you tomorrow for the Queen Stage, Stage 20. Have a good day.